Now listen, kids, we love Santa. We have to say it. I have to say it. We love Santa. Everybody loves Santa. But remember, December 25th, baby Jesus' birthday. We must keep that in mind. December 25th, baby Jesus. Just thought I'd get that in. We love Santa, but let's not be silly.
Oh, that's nice. Merry Christmas.
All right. You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
This just in, Santa Claus is dead.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a guy, I'm friends with him on Facebook, and his name escapes me, but, you know, he launched into a Facebook thread, you know, Billy Meier, discuss. I'm sorry, what? you know, I mean, again, it's 2017, and we're still having this discussion. I mean, I didn't partake in it for maybe two posts. But, you know, there were people on there still arguing the point. And I'm like,
oh, I'm sure.
You really don't, you're really not going to go anywhere forward in this stuff until you admit some pretty basic and fundamental things. And, you know, and I tried to do that with the blog. I tried to, and it did. I mean, I'm not the pessimistic guy that I used to be in this stuff. Because I used to say, and I know Jeremy used to get really aggravated at me when I would say, I don't think any of this Emma Woods stuff, I don't think it had any influence at all. I don't believe that now. I do think it did to the people who mattered, but to the people who just don't matter, to real progressive thinking on this stuff, it didn't matter to them, but that doesn't mean it didn't matter. And the same thing with the blog. I think for people who get it, or who read it and then it clicked for them, they really get it. And I have people write me nearly every day, at least three or four times a week. I get an email from somebody going, holy shit, I can predict stuff about this before it happens. You know, I can tell, I can look at people in this field and say, they're not going to make it. You know, I can see where this particular case that I've thought all my life was so solid, I see where there's these hinky parts in it now that don't seem to add up. And now I'm looking at it from this angle, and it all makes sense. It's all exactly as it's supposed to be. And it's a fucking revelation, man, when you get there. And so I wonder if that's not the lead, that's the lead of the trickster is trying to lead us into recognizing these fundamental things about the nature of reality, at least as it applies to this stuff. Because once you take this and you understand this to a certain degree, you can begin overlaying this thing over top of world events. You can begin overlaying it into your own life. And you will see very interesting correlations and synchronicities that happen all over, not just in paranormal land, but all over everything. And it's really interesting. But, you know, you can't make a horse drink when it won't, you know. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. So, you know, it's but the people who have gotten it have really gotten it. So, and I'm grateful for that. So, you know, I don't know where it leads, but it's got to be doing something. There's got to be some forward momentum in that. And I think the first step to doing that is recognizing these hallmarks and admitting that, yes, these things exist in the topic that I place a great amount of faith in for people out there. This is what I think they need to say. I recognize this as an article of faith. I recognize that my belief is not always mired in facts. I recognize that there is an element of this that is deceptive and that revels in hokery. So I think those are things that people have to admit and then move forward knowing that. And then the whole field becomes a lot more rich for everybody.
Now, I had a question for you, Jeff, because we had Ren Collier on, and he mentioned that you said this, but he didn't really know the details specifically from what I can remember. But he said something like, if you hang out at the same place long enough, that something weird will happen or something like that? Or, like, if you can kind of conjure this, not in the Stephen Greerian way, but just sort of, like, in a sense of, like, repeatability and open-mindedness or something, I think is kind of the idea. That makes any sense?
Well, yeah, and I'll debut this on your final season.
All right, nice.
I think that we can no longer say that people like Greer, who go out for the purpose of seeing weird things in the sky, I don't think that we can 100% say they never see anything. I think whatever he's doing, him being, in my mind at least, and in the minds of a lot of people, an extraordinarily marginal figure, he who has been mired in bullshit for years, in my opinion, yes, he is a prime candidate for taking people out, having them focus their intent on seeing these things and seeing these things. Do I believe he has vectored craft into several hundred feet? No, I don't. But I believe they have seen things. I don't know how frequent it is, but it stands to reason he might have some success.
Yeah.
But I think anyone can do this. You need not pay Greer, $800 or $1,000 to go out in the middle of the woods with him, to do this. Ren and I did a show on Where Did the Road Go? We did a thing together, and that's exactly what I said is. Going to a place and actively seeking out the phenomena with a certain level, a certain unhealthy level of obsession and a certain unhealthy level of obsession about it will likely facilitate something.
Weird. We're getting a reverb. Fanny, you got the... Turn your radio down, Vaney.
What?
All right, weird. We got a real reverb just then. I thought maybe you had the sound on or something at your place.
No.
Oh, strange.
So yeah, I did say, but I don't recommend it. I don't recommend it because again, engaging in a lot of this stuff means you lose friends, you lose relationships, you lose jobs. It's a deconstructor. So is there a way to temper that? There probably is. This is probably what we're yet to learn. How do we temper it so that we can study it without losing ourselves in it? That's probably part of this too. So, but yeah, I believe you can actively engage this phenomena face to face, but I don't think you're going to do it with cameras. I don't think you're going to do it with, with a mass of people, like 1,000 people. I don't think that's going to happen. As personal as this experience has been, as tailored as it has been for me and Jeremy and a bunch of other people, thousands of other people, I think that that's almost the level that you have to approach it with. Greg Bishop says approach it with the obliqueness that it shows you. And I think that's a pretty good way to look at it, to approach it in that kind of way, with an expectation.
Might be fruitful.
To see something, but not an expectation of what that something might be.
What do you think the point is, though, of wanting to see something or interact with it in the first place? I mean,
can you say that one more time?
I mean, for someone who's an experiencer, we want answers or we want some level of relationship with this. It makes sense. But for the average Joe who hasn't had an experience, what do you think what would be the proper motivation to want to do it in the first place?
Confirmation.
Of what, though?
That there is some other. You know what I mean?
I don't know. It seems like the same thing as if the government said, yep, we have a crash saucer. We don't know anything about it.
Yeah, but
no,
to me,
no,
it's
but what
like,
I'm saying is
no,
if they said if they said we have a no, I get that, but let me finish this for a sec.
Okay, sorry.
If the government says, yes, we have aliens, alien bodies, we don't know anything beyond that. We have no relationship with them. We don't know what they want or anything. But, yeah, we've got them. Then
right.
People who are interested in ufology, because they've already put all of their – they've projected onto this what they want it to be and what they think it is, they're going to go, aha, that's it. I know it. So it's personal confirmation of their own bias and of their own projection. Isn't that going to be the same thing with making contact with something that doesn't really actually reveal its true self?
Yeah. Unfortunately, most people aren't that. They probably don't think of it that deeply, so they just go to their local haunted school and fucking run around. But
if they make contact, then isn't that actually going to hurt them in some way? Because it's gonna further the delusion, or it's gonna take their suspicions and their beliefs and turn it into a delusion, because now they've got confirmation that this is real when they don't actually have confirmation that what they think is real is real.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I see what you're saying. I'm sorry, there's a horrifying delay for anybody who doesn't know.
This is like we're running this show on tin cans and string tonight. Jesus.
Yeah. I think Jeremy, you could be right that depending on what they go looking for, they may see, and that may just confirm their error in what they believe it is,
or what
they would have come to expect. But there is, at least it seems to be that there is going to be always a subset that doesn't get what they expect. And I think that either that subset is the majority or the minority. I'm not sure which it is yet. But a lot of people who have tended to try and do this to some fashion or another usually come back and say, it's nothing like what I expected. But they say that they this is the important bit, is to go into it. Again, is this something that we have to convince ourselves otherwise of? Is this part of what the forced growth is about? Is abandoning your preconceived notions of something that you have no idea about in the first place? You have an idea, but you don't know. And so you concoct an answer in your head. Well, that's fucked right from the get-go. It would behoove human civilization to rid itself of such a pretense before it even goes into areas like science or relationships or, human behavior, those kinds of things. So if somebody goes out there and takes the McKenna approach to things and says, what can you show me? And that's the extent of it. And they just look around, no matter where they might go, whether it's an outdoor, whether it's an indoor, whether it's a closed room in their home, sitting in front of a mirror in darkness, as, Dr. Moody talked to us about. Remember that? What could you expect? What might happen? They should go somewhere and they should approach it with a question mark, not with a preconceived notion already outlying. That's part of the growth process to me as to where people have to get to.
I will say this, it's hard to tap into that mindset though, because I did a ghost hunt this summer and tried to imbue myself with that spirit in a sense, where I wasn't like walking around trying to notice things, but instead just walked around aimlessly, almost trying to like keep my mind blank, and it still didn't work. So I don't know if I was trying too hard in a weird way, like by not trying at all, but I was very disappointed because it was like I thought I had figured it out, where I'm like, I know, I'm going to go on this ghost hunt and just be fucking chilled out and not just sit in a chair for like 15 minutes and see what happens, nothing fucking happened. And I'm like, this sucks.
Well, and the thing is, I go back to Lisa and Cody going down to my father-in-law's house and feeling this creeped out, feeling a presence, feeling all of that, It was immediately, as Cody described it, it was immediately an it. It was, there's something there. There's someone there, and it's not good. And if that might have been someone else, they might have used the D word, you know, or they might have said, you know, something like, you know, Pop-Up was as angry. So immediately the tendency is to overlay some kind of belief on top of a feeling. As palpable as it could be, there's this tendency to want to box that up into something that you can understand. I said, how about we go down there, the three of us, and we don't go in there with the notion that we know it's not Dad. Let's go from the notion that it's not demonic and it's not an evil thing. How about it's this? How about it's that in periods of change, historically, these places, from indigenous peoples to colonials to whatever, there were places where you didn't go. And if you went, you were put under some kind of ritual. You were cleansed in some way because you don't bring that back to the tribe, right? So we're going to that place where you are not supposed to go. And so if you get a bad feeling in a house, stop thinking of it as demonic or angry spirit or an it. It is a warp of reality that tends to force people not to want to be there. And if it's forcing you not to want to be there, chances are there's something there that you have to stand long enough. So I go back to McKenna again. His entire psychedelic journey was about trying to stand in that place more, quote unquote. How much can you take? Can you take enough that you might be able to stand to be there long enough to actually learn or see something? So is that not a more open, effective way to approach that situation rather than going in saying there's a demon in this house that needs to be cleansed? There's the evil spirit here. There's something here that's going to batter and abuse me, you know? Because I think if you go in with that, that's certainly what you might end up getting. You know, whereas I'm trying to prime everybody to go in and just say, what can this show me? What is here? What do I feel?
Right.
And not try and label it. You know, that to me, like, maybe that's a meat hook we can throw out to see if anything grabs a hold of it.
Yeah. Well, it's hard for people to do. It's ridiculous as it sounds. That's like the end of Ghostbusters, right? He fucking conjures the Marshmallow Man. Because you're not supposed to think about anything.
Right.
You find it odd that if we're lucky, we're on the planet for about 100 years, less than 100 most of us, and yet there's a thing called boredom, and there's this drive to search for more because whatever we've got right now isn't enough. And yet the answer to all of that search, whether it's the spiritual truth is a pathless land, or it's click your heels and you're always home, Dorothy, or take a mushroom out of cow shit, or, you know, you can create a haunted location in your own house and engage this stuff. I mean, the answer is always that it's right there in front of you and that this stuff is always around. Like, that's the answer. Is that it's right there. So it just seems like there's this weird thing of like, yeah, we're only on the planet for a limited amount of time, and so we're striving to do anything other than what we've got. And when it comes to the spiritual stuff or the paranormal stuff, that stuff is right here with us, it turns out, with what we've got. And so it's just a matter of opening up to it. It's not a matter of going anywhere for it.
Right.
it's just odd. It's just an odd situation that we're living in.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe
well,
that's part
of
the brain culture problem. Maybe that's part of us just realizing that, again, there's this bigger ecosystem that is invisible to us because we put on blinders and pavement and built houses and internet and all that stuff to block this shit out in religion, to block out everything as evil that's not Jesus-y. So maybe we've blocked out this thing around us, and we know that it is also a part of us, so we're aching for it and we're looking for it, but it's right there because it's a part of us. And if that's the answer, then there's really nothing to search for, is there? It's just right there.
Yeah. And I can't lie and say that at least in this, you know, hiatus, as brief as it's been for me, I can't say that, you know, when I'm sitting there, you know, fixated on a painting, that it hasn't crossed my mind to say, is this really what this is all about? Is it being ensnared by it and then figuring out that you need to leave it? That's the whole point. is that the point? Is to become so ensnared in it that it becomes your life, and then to extricate yourself from that kind of I don't know, that entanglement of this stuff. Is that part of it too? You know, and on some level, I feel like that is true. You know, like to recognize that, you know, it can't be the all. That's been not that hard to walk away from this time, and not that and that for me just started by, you know, seeing a guy watching a guy on Facebook paint. I was like, God damn, I remember that, you know? I remember that. I want to do some more of that. And now I'm 50 and now I got to do this. And so there I go. And
it's kind of cliche, but people have said it, but it's like ufology, all this paranormal, it is like a religion. And it's almost like fucking cult. And when you, and sometimes if you get away from it, it sounds like the people from like Scientology and shit. You know what I mean? Because I've mused about sort of the same things you're talking about, and it sounds the same way. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, mm-hmm. once you escape from this frame of mind, this faith, this article of faith, like you said earlier, you know, this act of faith.
Yeah.
It's you have a whole different worldview. You know what I mean? So.
You do. Yeah. Well, you have a different way of looking at it too, which is the real value of, you know, pulling your head out of the water to take a breath, is that you gain a completely that outside perspective pretty quickly.
Exactly.
And that's valuable too. You know, that's valuable when you decide to dunk in again.
With this shit, it's super worthwhile because most people don't fucking pull their head out of their own ass and out of the paranormal water.
Exactly.
Well, Jeff, where do you fit in Jeff Kripal's, where the author is creating the story as the story is creating the author? Does that fit in with the trickster thing?
See, and and here's, you know, and here's where I feel like, you know, at one point I said to myself, well, they both can't coexist. There's no way that one can exist without the other, or with the other. And then I go, well, wait a minute. You know, if we're talking about the stuff that we got from Project Core, the stuff that we discovered out of that, as rudimentary as that was, then yeah, there is some kind of ligament holding that thing together. In that there's the creative process, which is imagination, which is, what does everybody say when you say, I saw a ghost? Ah, it's your imagination. So imagination has always been kind of marginalized throughout history. So you've got that kind of element kind of swimming through both. And you've got the notion of, you know, creative personalities who have always been marginalized throughout history as, you know, these are flighty people. These are they're very artsy. They're into very fringy things. They're easily dismissed. They're easily forgotten. But the facts are facts. Is that, you know, creative people, as a whole, we put the milestones up for humanity that you go back through history, and we create the things that stick out the most. The Sistine Chapel and Stonehenge and all of these things that were creative endeavors, these are the things that stick out the most. So clearly there's more to the creative process, and there's more to, as Jeff says, externalizing the internal. I think that that is a very, I think that's hand in hand with kind of a, you know, trickster theorem. And I'm not even sure that trickster theorem is even really what we should be calling this stuff anymore. I think it might need some kind of new name, because I think that it's, I think that there are certain things becoming known about quote unquote trickster stuff, that, yeah, has ties to literary, you know, literary figures, literary archetypes, but there's also things that we know that we can expect here, and that becomes predictive in certain ways. And so I don't know that you can necessarily say, I think trickster is a good thing for how it affects the people who are ensnared by it, but what is it when you know what to expect? What does it become then?
I just like calling it the
Jeff
other.
Kripal,
it's,
yeah,
it's,
I think that's
a vague
good,
enough term.
I think that's a, yeah, and it, even something, you know, less less anthropomorphic.
Horror movie, if cheesy,
you know, in a way. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I mean, just you know, just something that would. That would lend itself better to talking about it without people going, "Oh, trickster! I know what that's literary." No, it's not literary stuff in whole. You know, there are literary bits. So trickster came out of that term. I think came out of kind of the literary area, which is where Jeff kind of, you know, he plays around with that, and he plays around with the comic writers and the comic artists and the people who develop these stories. All of that exists in a very marginal state because who would ever believe these people? I mean, who would believe Doug Mensch that he wrote literally his robbery scenario minutes before it actually happened? Who would believe Grant Morrison in that he made his character after himself and then his life mirrored his character? You know, one before the other, I might add, the character in the comic book preceded his life. So, you know, all of these things, I think they figure in together. How it directly affects, how it directly connects in, how you can lay one puzzle piece inside the other, I don't know. Not yet, anyway. but I'm always thinking about that. So I think both George and Jeff are probably, in, like I've said before, have probably pushed my thinking forward on this more than anybody has.
Yeah.
And probably has pushed this field forward than anybody has in the last 20 years. But, you know, there's got to be some kind of way that those two kind of weave together, because I think they're both onto something very, very, very powerful in what they write about and the way that they phrase certain things, like, you know, internalizing or externalizing the internal. That's pretty poetic way to put it. And it's, you know, it's demonstrable. Again, if you look at it from the trickster perspective, this is all very predictable. So, I don't know. The answer is, I don't know.
I forget what the question was. Vaney, did you pitch that one to? Yeah, you asked him what, about Jeff Kripal stuff.
Yeah,
I was just riveted. I've tried my best to stay out of the way during a lot of this, because I've enjoyed the.
I think you're writing a book.
Oh, get the hell out of here! I have to respond to people as the fucking show goes on. Jesus, they chat.
Oh, your chat room.
Yeah, but it's kind of. It's not exactly it's not exactly hopping this evening. This evening, it's not quite Christmas party level, but we take what we can get. I actually loathe the chat room. Did you guys have a chat room when you did the show?
When we did the live show, yeah.
Yeah, it's the worst.
Yeah.
There's dead air there. Like,
yeah.
Benal, don't insult the chatters, dude. That's podcasting 101. You,
that's
you always show love. You always show love to the chatters. No, it's just that sometimes they get on there. Am I? I'm not breaking up, am I?
No.
Okay. Yeah, sometimes they get on there, and then they – it is alligator. I think you'll appreciate this, Jeff. It's like they get on, and then they're like, you're live, and they're like, show's not working for me. I'm running Windows 95 on a Winamp. How come I can't hear the show? And it's like, I'm trying to host this show right now. I don't have time to do IT work for you.
Your blanket statement, Tim, your blanket statement to that question should be, hit the F5 key.
Yeah, exactly.
Hit the F5 fucking key.
Yeah. It's very, so that was the typing you heard. Well, it's funny because in anticipating this interview, and we got like 5 minutes left or so, 7 minutes. Can we go a little bit over? I know you guys are busy, so I won't keep you. I won't just willy-nilly just keep talking, but can I keep you a little past the hour? All right. Well, I have to ask. Some people get tired. They have other shit going on, you know? They're like, Benal, I just gave you 2 hours, man. Fuck off. I was laughing because throughout this whole show because I was thinking to myself, I was like one of the I'll wind it up with the big question at the end where it's like, what do you do post retirement from this wacky field? Because I think, you know, you guys, Jeremy, you still do. Now I'm laughing about the funny podcast that that has a similar name to yours because I'm confusing it.
Right.
Oh no.
Not only was it the same name, it was the same content. It was like finally a podcast that focuses only on the experiencers.
I'm not sure if I told you guys, but I'm going to be starting a new show next week called The Strange Event, and we're only going to be talking to experiencers. So I think it's a really event of concept.
Oh my God! There's your that's what I was looking for in the Christmas party theme. That moment right there.
I mean, it's crazy that this is somebody, I don't even know who it is at this point anymore, but someone who friended me on Twitter, I assume because he listens to The Experience, and yet I legitimately believe he had no clue that he had just aped my show. That was what was
magical.
Yeah,
no, I definitely don't think it was malicious.
Do a show called The Experience, and it's about experiencers? Yeah, dude, you friended me. What are you talking about? I post every week my show. What do you mean?
Well, here's a prediction, Jeremy, for you, based on my theory of how all this works. He will destroy you. As far as listenership numbers, he will blow you away.
That's
so there
funny.
You are.
I'm used to that.
Wow.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that was a funny, I don't even know what to say. I don't want to embarrass the guy because I feel now like we're just laughing at him. So, but, yeah, somebody launched a show, was about to launch a show that had almost the same name as Rainey's show with the same concept. Completely, like I said, I don't think it was malicious. Like, I don't think the dude,
he
had any, because he changed the name of the show once you pointed it out. And it was like, there's no, who would do that, you know? That would be so, a bad idea. Oh, God. Very weird. There's your trickster at work. Like, what the fuck is that all about?
Sucks. He bought
a
domain and everything.
Yeah, he bought a domain name. He started, like, he had a Facebook page and everything. And then, like, once you mentioned it, all of a sudden everything changed. And it was like, oh, well, that's – at least it wasn't like, hey, fuck you, man. I'm
yeah.
I'm going to war with you. Oh, God. I don't know about you guys, but I was setting it up to joke about how I hope to wrap up the interview asking what it's like in a post-podcasting world, retirement or whatever, and it's like, because you guys have done that. But I feel like that's been the whole, like, theme of the show in a lot of ways, like asking the questions. It's not just about asking the big questions, but it's like asking why the fuck we were even asking these questions in the first place, you know, once you get to that point. It's like, what the fuck are we talking about here, you know?
Yeah.
But I was feeling nostalgic as that. I do It's funny, when we were coming up in all this, it was like, there were like weird podcast wars and shit. And now we're older, and like most of those other people, I've either just completely blocked them on all of social, they exist somehow, but I've eliminated them from my world. But it's just funny, some of those weird memories coming up in all this.
Although there is one special person who you do still stick it to every now and again.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Yeah. Yeah.
A certain beggar.
Well, you know.
A certain Uber driver.
Yeah. Exactly. All I'll say is this. When it comes to paranormal podcasting, there's only one cash for gold standard. And I think we all know who that is.
Yep. He's a broken toy.
Oh, God. Yeah, but that shit, you know, it's like, I guess I'll miss some of these ridiculous morons, but I feel like, you know, I don't know, I feel ridiculous putting him over, but I don't know, but I think you guys would appreciate it. Have you heard Aaron Gulyas's podcast, Saucer Life?
Nope.
It's really, really good. It's very different. He doesn't have any – he just sort of tells a story about different contactees and abductees. I don't know if abductees, but contactees and stories from saucer lore. And it's very, like, NPR-ish. And it was like – I listened to the first couple seasons of it. I haven't caught up recently, but I was just like, holy fuck, this is, like – this is good paranormal podcast, man. Like, this is really good. I almost think that, you know – I had him on the show, we were talking about it. It's like, in a way, the whole classic paranormal radio format is like, it's just been so oversaturated and overdone. Where it's like, here's the guest this week, and we're going to talk to them about their book. It's like, Jesus Christ, there's a million podcasts and a million guests and everything. It's just been done to death almost. It's very hard to do. I guess is the point I'm trying to make.
No argument
either
there.
Yeah. Vaney, how do you find, what do you have for guests on your experiencer show? Like actual people? Did we lose Vaney? Did we lose Jeff? Jesus Christ.
I'm here.
Yeah, that's weird. Yeah, we lost Vaney. All right, he'll be back in a moment. All right, well, I guess the point... weird. I guess the point I was trying to make, Jeff, was... someone says, Tim, you insult everyone. I don't think so. I think that for as great as it is, I mean, it's like classic rock. Interviewing people is awesome, and that's, you know, it's a standard of all, you know, forms of journalism and media and all that other shit. But it's like the idea of, like... What used to be crazy and original back, like, in the 90s and shit was like, here, let's interview this UFO researcher and shit. It's like, it's just completely been just, you know, it's an ocean of interviews now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, when we started Paratopia, I told Jeremy, I said, you know, I remember, because it right before we started that show, I remember the feeling that this whole endeavor gave me, which was this sense of this being heavy and very, I don't know what the word is, prickly. Like you had to watch every word that you said and how every word that you said would be taken. And I remember saying to Jeremy, you know, I remember when this, you know, probably, I don't know, somewhere 10 years prior where this used to be kind of, you would get together with people that you liked and you would kind of joke around, but then you'd get into these serious discussions. And I remember that used to be an enjoyable thing to do. And if you had a couple of laughs, that helped you to loosen up with people and helped you to talk about things you might not otherwise talk about, I guess.
Yeah.
And I said, we could do a show like that where, you know, we try to make light of certain things, like a political cartoon, but about this stuff. And what if we could do that and people would laugh and then they would stick with us long enough to hear the about the stuff that matters or talk about the stuff that
to learn.
Think is
yeah.
interesting. Yeah. And it worked, man, did it work. And, you know, like I said, we just reached that point where, you know, where it just became too cyclical. Like we weren't, there was
yeah.
nothing new coming for us in that period. And I'm not going to lie. And if Jeremy's back on the line, he'll tell you, I mean, this is, you know, when we talk about, infighting and tricksterism and all that, all those things that happen by virtue of what you're involved with, you know, I mean, we've gone through our own set of things about that. I mean, we've gone through our own, you know, disagreements. We've had our own falling ins and outs, and you know, and there's no way about it. But you know that, you know, the familiarism can breed contempt in this stuff, and that's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
oh yeah, sure.
Nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. And so, you know, I decided, you know, like, let's do Paratopia again, but let's do it when we feel like doing it, and we'll keep the website, but we don't have to like kill ourselves to make it happen. And
I will say this: I've learned anything this final season, it's that as crazy as it sounds, like a podcast is a lot easier to do if you. Like actually commit to a set like time and day. Like I've managed to hit almost
yeah.
every week since May, and I'm like still stunned as I go along that I'm like holy fuck, I've hit every, you know, I think I've skipped like maybe 2 weeks over the last like 9 months or whatever. It's like holy shit.
Uh-huh.
Where before it was
yeah.
like when I feel like doing it, and that says more about me in a sense where it's like when you say I'll do the show when I want to do it. And then you don't end up doing it very often. It's like, that just tells you that you really don't want to do it very often. You know what I mean? It's like
it's
the ultimate
exactly
litmus test.
It. Yeah, that is exactly it. You know, like you need to, at a certain point, it's got to be the kind of thing where you really love doing it and you're on a tear of some kind, digging through something interesting, or you're not. And if you're not, you know, I said to Jeremy, I said, I subscribe to the Jacques Vallée way of doing things. When you have something to say, say it. When you don't, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of where, I mean, the only thing that I really have going forward for me is, that I really want to do, kind of a YouTube series, which I can do now that I have my Macintosh back and can edit video again. I really want to do something that people can watch because I think I've done the audio, I've done, you know, the writing part of the blog, but what if I took some of the blog content, made that into something that somebody could watch?
Yeah.
Not necessarily with me on the screen because nobody wants to see that, but, you know, what if I walked people through certain scenarios and did it in a watchable format? I think that could be fun to do. And it might help more people to kind of understand where I'm coming from with this stuff. But that's the only thing. And I'm in no hurry, you know, I'm in no hurry. So,
right.
You know, for me, it's, you know,
that's a good place to be because
yeah,
I'm kind of in the
yeah,
same way
yeah.
where it's like, I'm going to wrap up the show shortly into the new year. And then it's like the world is my oyster. I have a million ideas of things I want to do. So,
and that's it. And that's where your passion will be. You know?
Exactly.
And I hate to say it, but you'll find it immensely more rewarding. Personally, I guess is the best way to put it. You know, like I've been doing a lot of painting lately, and I've painted two so far. Painted two pictures that I feel good about. And, you know, and I'm like, yeah, I'm getting a lot more satisfaction out of that right now than anything in the paranormal realm at present moment, you know? And
Right.
And so, you know, I'm looking to my immediate goals are I would really like to get licensed by Disney to paint Star Wars stuff, you know? And so that's what I'm trying to go for. You know, and I ain't there yet, but, I'm going to keep plugging at it and see where I can go. And if it happens, great. And if it doesn't, I'm still having a blast, you know? So
yeah, exactly.
There you are.
All right. I'm trying to get Vaney back to call back in for a proper wrap up. But, when I was talking about, what Aaron Gullius is doing, what I thought was interesting, too, I wanted to mention and credit you guys for. That's why I kind of wish Manny was on the line. But, you know, you guys tried something different beyond that interview style yourselves when you, you know, like did a reformat where you tried to get people to fucking tell their stories. And it seems like maybe Manny eventually kind of got it working in a sense. Oh, God. It says Manny can't call in. Oh, weird.
Uh-oh.
All right. Well, we lost Vaney, so.
Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah. Weird. All right. Yeah, because they say the show's over, so Vaney can't call in because the show's over. But, all right. Well, this is classic. This is Christmas party here, folks. Vaney went out to have a cigarette, got locked out of the fucking restaurant, and he just called an Uber home. And that's how the night ended for Vaney. So I'll finish putting you over here, and Vaney, where it's like, you know, you guys tried something different and that was awesome, you know, and Aaron's doing something really different. And it's like, there's a real need or sort of a real crying out for like different shit in this field, not even just different thinking, but like just different presentation of this stuff. Cause like, you can't keep just interviewing the guy with the latest book over and over again. It's not working. Or at least it's not entertaining to me and the people who are into this stuff for a long, long time.
Yeah.
But
I agree.
We'll see, you know, we'll see where the medium goes. All right. Well, I guess I'll wrap it up because I feel bad dragging people past. Some guests get really tired and shit, and it's like, so I feel bad. I know you're fucking super busy, so.
I got 5 hours ahead of me still, so I'm good.
Well, when you say that, now I'm tempted to. Nah, I don't want to even fucking get on this Tom DeLonge thing. I've wasted so much. I joked with somebody on the show like last week where it was like, they're going to look back on this final season because, you know, some years it was like the year of 2012 where it was like, what do you think's going to happen? Every guest was like, what do you think's going to happen in 2012? You know, and it's like this year it's like,
right. They're
going to look back and be like, who the fuck was this Tom DeLonge guy and why everybody cares so much about him, you know?
Yeah, let's hope.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. There's a part of me that thinks, like, someone's going to try some kind of, like, weird, like, orchestrated disclosure, like a shitty version of disclosure. It's only going to half work.
Yeah.
But it's like, to me, it's like, whatever, just enough with that shit.
I don't even
know
think
what
it's
I mean?
Going to be that.
Yeah, no one's going to take it seriously.
I think Greg Bishop disagrees with me, but I think, you know, this is like Benowitz 2.0. I really think that's what's going on.
Yeah, that's the perspective I've heard. And I was talking to Stan Friedman to set up the holiday special, and I mentioned to him, because he had the best line, like, in 2008, where he's like, people don't care about disclosure. They're worried about foreclosure.
Right.
Like, that's exactly.
This is true, yes.
Right, and that was their, you know, now look at what's going on in the world. It's like you think people are going to give a fuck about UFOs when, like, Donald Trump's the president and we're about to go to nuclear war, or else they're going to force him out of power and God knows what he's going to fucking do?
Right, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, Tom DeLonge being involved in this is certainly random, you know? So I couldn't imagine anything more random happening, you know, than a rock star coming into this and doing what he's doing. So,
well, it's like a reality star being elected president.
Yeah, I mean, I think if Greg Bishop, I mean, he's a wise dude, Greg Bishop is, and, you know, when he says mirror the obliqueness of the subject, he's right. I mean, that's you know, if that's any hallmark to look out for, then you don't get much more random than that. So,
well, if you have time, I do want to actually do, it's funny because what I just said kind of embodies how I feel in a way, because it's like I find a lot of this shit less interesting now. Mm-hmm. And I believe this is genuinely like a phenomenon that you could put over the paranormal, like as a blanket in a sense, where it's like this fucking reality show of reality has become too engrossing to really care about a lot of this other shit. Where it's like the fact that like we're living in this crazy fucked up world is way more paranormal than like UFOs and shit. To me, in a sense. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I think
it's like post 9/11.
I don't disagree that that the perception is out there that everything is out of control and just absurdly ridiculous, and you know, truth has been, you know, circumvented and obviously done so. But I also think I think people need to get perspective away from the media. I think the media is fueling so much of this, you know.
Yeah.
We're on the ship of fools and we're running aground. I mean, I think that that's just not what's going on. You know, I mean, in truth, you know, is Trump everything that people say he is? Yeah, he is. But that said, you know, I mean, it's a temporary figure in politics, and yeah, there are things going on that are alarming, but hasn't there always been alarming things going on? Just that now we don't have this person in that chair that we feel comfortable with. And okay, that's fine. But I do think that the media has worked the American public into a fucking frenzy. And that's something that we need to get over. We need to stop being played. I think we're all being played, not only by this jackass in D.C., but I think, you know, we're being played by the media. And
For sure.
And I think,
set this whole thing up, dude. They're the ones who got them fucking elected.
Oh yeah, the fucking inundation of this shit from the time you pick up your phone in the morning to the time you go to bed after watching TV. It's like it's in your face all the time. We got to disconnect, people, you know? Like,
right.
You need to unplug. You need to, like, go for a hike. You need to go antiquing. You need to go sit with your grandpa and let him tell you stories. I mean, just do something else. You know, so for me, it's like I get up in the morning. I read Facebook. That's like the news for me. Past that, I go to work, and I come home, and I paint. And I don't see another thing the rest of the day. So,
yeah.
Yeah,
I noticed you got
a
lot more. Yeah. There's some people that went off the fucking deep end after the election. Like, I mean, God bless them. I love Alfred Lemberg, but every day it's like some poem about Trump.
Yeah.
Trump, you know, the villainy
right.
of Trump.
Right.
And it's like, I love
right.
them. They're fantastic poems, but it's like, Jesus, Alfred, get out of the house. Like, do.
Right.
And he lives in Alabama, for fucking God's sakes. Like, get out of Alabama, first of all, dude.
Right, yeah. Yeah,
like,
I mean,
especially what's going on
just,
down there.
Yeah, it's just, you know, this has happened before, too. I mean, we've been in this kind of media-induced frenzy before, and, you know, I'm a firm believer in everything will be fine. Everything will move forward just as it always has. And we'll be disappointed and we'll be disenfranchised and we'll be aggravated and pissed off. And the next person we put in that seat, everyone will rejoice. And then in 4 years after that, everybody will hate them and we'll go to a new love. It's this fickle notion of what everybody thinks is right. And,
right.
You know, but I can say, you know, what isn't right is, you know, or take it however you want. I mean, what isn't right is, you know, that for years, you know, one thing the media has gotten right, I should say, is that for years, you know, it's somehow in our world and in our culture, it's been acceptable to to abuse our women. You know, somehow that's been acceptable. And I for one, am really glad that it's not anymore. And I'm glad that people are being held to account who act like the dregs of planet Earth and think that it's okay to, you know, act in the ways that they are with women.
I'll be honest with you. Like, when I hear these stories, like, they're completely, like, they're completely foreign to me in a sense where it's like, Jesus Christ, dude, like, I just couldn't, you know, I wouldn't force myself on someone like that. That's just fucked up.
Yeah, I hear these stories.
You know,
who are these people? Like,
right.
You know,
even if it's like,
gumption to do that, you know?
Yes, exactly. Like, where it's like, oh, he just whipped his penis out when I came into his office. It's like, never in my life would I fucking ever consider doing that. Are you crazy?
And that's the difference. And see, that's the difference. You know, it's like, I think what people don't realize, and I'll tell you, I saw this because I worked in the entertainment industry for more than a few years, and I met celebrities, and I got to the point where celebrity did not impress me anymore. And the one thing that my business partner told me, who was in that business a lot longer than I ever was, he said to me when I had an instance with a particular celebrity that didn't agree with, I had a problem with. He just said to me, Jeffrey, there's one thing you have to understand about this business is that these people don't live in the same world that we do.
Right.
And I said, what do you mean? He says, they don't live in the, they don't have the same concerns, worries, or they don't concern them things with the things that we do. He said, I live on a whole different level from what you and I do, and it's not reality. And so when I see these people talking like the Matt Lauers and the others like him, that's all that comes to mind for me is my business partner saying these people don't live in the same reality that we do.
Yeah.
And that may seem to make some kind of weird sense. You know, it's like, no, you or I would think that that's absurd to do that kind of crap. But to them, they live in a world where that's okay. And I'm glad that finally, if this president hasn't done anything positive, I think that's the one positive thing that's happened is the Me Too thing is running wild right now, and it needs to get wilder. And
for sure.
You know, and it needs
the fucked up part is that he
totally needs to be exposed, and these people need to be shamed, and they need to lose their jobs. You know, and it's
absolutely
just,
yeah.
You know, I think that's a real great turning point for our culture. I think in general that this is happening. You know, it may hurt now, but hey, whatever. You know, I thought Kevin Spacey was a great actor, but I'm sorry, I don't think he's so great anymore. You know. So
I mean,
it is what it
part
is.
Part of me worries about what's going to happen next week with that election down in Alabama, because it's like, we're also pivoting to a society where it's like the ends just there's a segment of society that are just ends justify the means, and they're willing to fucking, you know, there are people who say, I'd rather vote for this guy. I don't care if he's a pedophile. I'm going to vote for him.
Right.
I'd rather a pedophile in Congress, in the Senate, than a Democrat. It's like, dude, once you get into that kind of tribalism, it's like, this is really fucked up, man. Like, this is really fucked up.
What's really in a way kind of fascinating about that in a weird way is that I've noticed the psychology of this sort of person that will do that. Because every time I see a political post that is, you know, the opposite of what I think in the most extreme way, I go to that person's Facebook page and I look and I see what they talk like and I see how they act towards other people,
not only towards
women, but towards every, like, I will look at what person is this? What do they look like? And they all tend to look the same to me. They tend to have a need to be, and this is the best word I can think of for them, it's a contrarian, you know?
Yeah.
And I've had these people tell me flatly, I love it when the president does something so outrageous that all you libtards can do is cry about it. I live on you crying out about it. You know, and
yes,
that,
I've
I
seen
that
those
says,
people.
And that says a lot, I think. I think that says
yeah.
right there that what they're looking for isn't progression of, you know, a healthy America
cause.
Or a healthy society. What they're looking for is to needle somebody to provoke a reaction that, you know, is negative. These are the people that thrive
troll
on negative
culture.
Attention. Yes.
Yep, troll culture.
Yes. And I you know, I'm probably sick about such things, but that's what I just noticed, like, not long ago, and I thought, wow, that's really what they're thriving on. They're not thriving on the political view. They're thriving on, you know, how much can you piss off the other side that isn't me?
Right.
So,
yeah.
And you find that in ufology. You find that in the paranormal. You find it everywhere. So it's not just in that venue. It's everywhere. So very interesting stuff.
Yeah, yeah. No, you hit the nail on the head. I said that last week talking to Bruce Rucks or Paul Kimmel was like, this whole attitude of, like, vote for the worst. I blame
right.
There's a whole generation of people that were like, well, just vote for Sanjaya to be on American Idol because it'll be funny. Like,
right.
I mean, considering the margins of the election, just those people could have swung it to Trump. It's like,
right.
No, dude, don't.
Yeah.
You, as soon as I sound like get off my lawn, it's like you millennials are fucking idiots. Don't vote for the reality star because it'll be funny.
Right.
Oh, God.
I know.
Well, how do you, I'll ask you this, and then we'll wrap it up. How do you think it's going to end, though? How do you think this thing's going to end? Because of this Flynn thing, I'm like, I feel they're getting, they're setting the stage for, like, trying to impeach him, but at the same time, it's like, he's such a fucking wild card that I won't feel safe until he's not the president anymore.
Yeah, I think that it's going to be shocking. I mean, certainly we're not hearing the full extent of what has Mueller's investigation uncovered. Certainly we don't know all that's been discovered yet. But I think that, how do I think it's going to play out? I think that we better get used to saying President Pence, and as much as I don't like him either, at least I know, or I think that I know that he seems a little bit more grounded than what we've got. But no, I think it's going to be a shock. I think one day they're going to come forward and they're going to say, you know, he's either been removed from office or he resigns, you know, or he's arrested. Or, I mean, I think it's going to be that shocking.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And I hate to say it, but I feel like you. I feel like unsafe. But at the same time, I don't look forward to a president being removed from office. Like, that's not,
I've only seen that
once before in my life, and that's not a good place for the country to be. But at the same time, it would certainly, I think, make a lot of people feel better. And I think it's certainly, judging by the decisions that the man has made for the country as of late, particularly, with regard to, not only the tax, scam, but the taking of, like, what, 80%+ of some national parks now are going to be doing all sorts of oil drilling.
Business.
And what?
Right.
I mean, that alone is abhorrent. And, so I think for those things, it's going to be fine. But I think it'll be shocking. I think you're going to be oh, my God, it's over? Like, this is – holy shit. I think it's going to be that kind of moment, you know?
You're absolutely right, I think, because I saw one of those little segments that Keith Olbermann was doing for GQ, and he said that in the when all that Monica Lewinsky shit was, like, hitting the fan, he was doing, like, an Access Hollywood or Entertainment Tonight or whatever interview with somebody for the new fall season on NBC, and he got a call from the news director or president or whatever, and they were like, Yeah, we're pretty sure the president's going to resign tonight at 8. So we need to fucking fly to the studio or whatever. And he was like, that was how it ended. You know, that's, you know, it didn't happen that way, but that's how it would have, it will go down if it does go down. Like, you know, I sit here and I hear the little alerts on my phone and I think to myself, like, one of these days it's going to alert and then go bing, 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 bing. And I'll look at my phone and it'll be like, Trump resigns. I think that's how it'll happen. You know?
Yeah, I think it will be, it will be a very big surprise. I really do. You know, or I think that the revelations that come forward are going to be like, oh my God. Like, I think, who was it? And you'll know more than me, because I honestly, I can't subject myself to it long enough to really get a complete and total picture.
Oh, I'm a total
I'm,
junkie on
so
this.
I'm a totally bad guy to be talking about this stuff, but, you know, somebody now, the investigation, they've stopped talking to them. Like they were cooperating and now they're not cooperating. And now Mueller's investigation has stopped discussing it with him, which says to me that, you know, shit's about to get real.
Oh no. Yeah. You're like a week behind. Do you know Michael Flynn or no? Do you know Michael Flynn?
He told
Trump's lawyers he wouldn't talk to them anymore. And then he cut a deal with the FBI and pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI in exchange to flip on the Trumps. So, that's, and the deal now is like, okay, what does he know and what's he telling the feds? And my theory, having just listened to you, sort of thinking about how I respond, was like, I could see them coming into Trump and being like, okay, this guy flipped, this guy flipped, this guy flipped. But here's what we have on Kushner, your daughter, your two sons, and they're all going to jail for like 40 years each. So either resign now or we're going to go ahead with this.
Right.
And he'll fucking resign. And he'll end up being like the martyr of the morons. That's the thing that, you know, you mentioned before where it's like if he – even if they take him out of office, like he'll forever be this figurehead of these people. And honestly, there's an inherent weird fucking fetish for authoritarianism in this country that manifested itself with Trump. And next time, they're not going to fucking roll out a reality star who says stupid shit. They're going to roll out someone who's slick and knows what they're doing. And this country is going to fucking walk its way into, like, the Fourth Reich.
Yeah. Well, I think it's I think what bothers me more than the notion of, you know, having this president and now, you know, apparently, like, you know, the downward slide to him being gone and all of that. I think what is more disturbing than that is that we now know that there is this portal where someone like him can be president. Yeah, that somebody can be elected like this. That's
30%
you were alluding to. That's what is the bit that we have to address. That's the bit that has to be you know, we have to make sense of that, and then we have to figure out how do we course correct that. You know, can we course correct that? And I feel like we can. I feel like, you know, this is, you know, I'll tell you what I feel like this is, Tim. I'll be really honest with you. I feel like this is the last gasp of this sort of moronic stuff. Like, this is the backlash from having our first black president. I feel like this is the, you know, the torch carrying moron brigade, the last gasp of air. And, you know, and that's what it is, you know, and from here forward, maybe it just extinguishes itself. But, you know, I've seen way too many Trump supporters now have turned on him. You know, I just can't imagine. I can't imagine having voted for having voted for him, now seeing what their vote has wrought. I can't believe that there's not more people going, this is not what I signed up for. You know, this is not what we were told was going to be. And
oh, I'm sure there are, but they don't want to admit it. You know, they're just kind of like,
and that's
oh,
it.
Fuck, you know.
Yeah. Well, because it makes them look like they got played, and it makes them look dumb. And, you know,
right, exactly.
I've said now for months that nobody need worry about feeling like that, because people got bamboozled. Like, so what? Everybody gets taken at one time or another in their lives. Like, this is not a crime, and it doesn't mean you're stupid. You know, what's stupid is
that
you got taken.
That's the frustrating part, too, where it's like, dude, I was, like, all bullish on Obama and shit when I voted for him. But then, like, after he went in and shit, when it was all said and done, I was like, okay, that wasn't quite what I signed up for, man. Like, this guy didn't really do what I thought he would, you know. But I was willing to have that self-examination where I was like, okay, dude, you know, this isn't – he failed me in this, that, and the other way. With some of these other people, it's like they don't want to fucking admit it, you know. And even back then, I would admit it. Like, look at, dude, I liked Obama, but one, it's ironic because Trump doesn't get invited on any fucking shows. But it was like my big complaint with Obama was like, dude, he's on Ellen, Tonight Show, Late Night with Jimmy Fallon, every fucking – every week Obama's on a different show.
Right.
Like, you kidding me?
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously no one wants Trump on their show now, but I had plenty of complaints with them. These people now, they just don't want to, like, admit that they fucked up or criticize them and shit. So it's very frustrating.
It's quite a circus.
All right, brother. Well, it's 10:30, so I should probably let you get going. Sorry, Vaney. I had to skip out.
Yeah, me too.
You know how it is. Old Vaney with his married life now. yeah. Well, I can't put you over enough, man. Vaney just literally texted me to say, are you still going? So he's like home. The Uber just dropped me off, and I'm the Uber dropped me off, and maybe I can get in on my Skype. No, he's not saying that. He just says, are you still going? But he says, tell the people I love them. Well, I love you guys, man. I really do. You know, I had to hound you in a sense because I know you didn't really want to do this. I know you didn't want to.
That's not true at all. That is not true at all. No.
Folks,
no,
I was on the phone with
Vaney,
and all of a sudden Jeff called in where it was like – I'm like, oh, Jeff's calling you to tell me, say, what the fuck has Binal doing? But I wanted to do this because you guys, you know, I interviewed a lot of people over the years on the show, but you guys were like brothers in arms because you were part of the podcasting world. And, you know, right?
Yeah.
Talking to you guys tonight, you know, like I said, makes me nostalgic of the weird podcast wars. And as I said, the cash for gold standard and all the other fucking lunatics in this field.
Yeah.
So, you know,
well,
you guys tried
to push the envelope
and did amazing stuff.
Well, thanks, Tim. I appreciate it. But let me just say this as you close the door here. You know, what you have done for over a decade now, right? So what you have done, as far as I'm concerned, at least in podcast world or even in radio land for that matter, I think that you have been able to bring more guests and more discussion to this topic than other topics in this whole weird world of strange stuff. Than I've seen anybody be able to do. And I think that for you to have done that for as many years as you've done it and to be successful doing it speaks volumes to your talent to be able to bring these people on the air and ask intelligent questions and have a frank discussion that still maintains productivity to today. You know, like, it's still doing that today. So I thank you for that and for all the years that I've listened and for all the shows that I've missed that now I can catch up on.
you go.
I'm serious, man.
You're head and shoulders
above, you know, the Steinbergs and the Heralds and everybody else. I mean, Binal for me is always going to be that place. So so thank you, and it was an honor to be part of this tonight. I really appreciate it.
Well, man, I wanted to have you on, man. I love you guys. You know,
I've been saying
you know, all season long. So, you know, all these different folks we've had on the show that have been on for so many years, you know, you guys aren't just guests and shit. You're not just friends. You're family, man. This is the show.
Absolutely.
You know? And I really do appreciate it. And it's been a fucking awesome run. And we're going to have so much fun, you know, after this, man. You know? So we're going to have all kinds of fun. So it's going to be a good time. Well, thank you very much, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
Exactly. Thank you for all the memories. And we'll see what happens next. And have a Merry Christmas. And Vaney says, have a Merry Christmas and all that good stuff, too, folks.
Beautiful.
All right, brother. Thank you. Good night.
You got it, boss. Take care now. Bye-bye.
There you go, folks. It was the Paratopia Christmas party here with Jeff Ritzman, Jeremy Vaney. Of course, Vaney had to catch an Uber home. God knows what he was up to. Probably took some of those Hawaiian mushrooms in honor of the Christmas party. And, you know, he got disconnected like 3 times. That's Vaney for you. What's going on? We're not going to do a show next week because we're going to go headlong into the holiday special, the 13th annual BOA holiday special, 2 weeks from tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern time here on Banal of America. I believe that is the 19th of December. Stanton Friedman, of course, is the guest. And so start sending your questions now. And we're going to try and get to as many as possible. And as I noted on last week's or 2 weeks ago on Ruxgiving, you know, this isn't the last holiday special. I'm going to keep doing these as long as me and Stan are around. So, I mean, at this point, well, we're at 13 now. I want to get all the way to 20 someday. That would be awesome. That would be absolutely amazing. So we're going to keep doing the holiday special. And the next edition of the holiday special is in 2 weeks, December 19th, 9 p.m. Eastern time. And join us, will you? I just felt like it was not the point to do a show between the Christmas party and then the holiday special. And let's face it, there's so much going on this time of year. I'm so busy. To do the show takes me one night on Tuesday night to do the show and then another night later in the week to put all the bells and whistles together for Banal of America. So it's like, dude, take a week off. It's the holidays, man. And that's what I'm going to do. So in 2 weeks, it's the holiday special with Stan Friedman. And so until then, go buy your gifts and stuff, man. And get back with me on the 19th to celebrate the holidays, Stanton Friedman. And until then, this is Tim Banal, thanking you for listening.